This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. The impeachment inquiry moves into a new phase today, from investigation to deliberation. The House Intelligence Committee has done its part, holding weeks of public and closed-door hearings over the Trump administration's dealings with Ukraine. Now, its findings and a rebuttal from the committee's Republican members will go before the House Judiciary Committee. They will decide what happens next, including drafting articles of impeachment. Joining us from NPR in Washington, to bring us up to speed on all of this is its congressional editor, Deirdre Walsh. Deirdre, welcome to 1A.
Hi there, Joshua.
We welcome your questions and thoughts about this. We'll just be discussing this for this first segment of the program before we move on. So do email us, 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. And of course, you can get the latest on today's hearings throughout the day at NPR.org. Deirdre, give us the basics of what it is they're discussing before the committee today. What's on today's agenda?
Well, today is really the impeachment process going to the next step. The House Judiciary Committee is taking up the baton from the House Intelligence Committee, which issued its report last night. Today, in the first public judiciary hearing, they're hearing from a panel of legal experts about what meets the threshold for an impeachable offense. They've got four legal scholars appearing. Three of them are ones that were invited by Democrats, and one was invited by the Republicans.
Yeah, tell us about these experts. What is it that they are supposed to help the members of the committee figure out?
Well, I think what the House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler is trying to do is repeat sort of what they did in the Clinton impeachment before they get into the nuts and bolts of the current question before the committee about whether or not the President Trump committed any impeachable offenses. They want to explain to the public what high crimes and misdemeanors spelled out in the Constitution are. What kinds of things could meet that threshold? Impeachment, remember, is a political process, not a legal process. So I think there's a lot of confusion in the public about whether Trump broke a law or, you know, changed a norm and what Congress's role is in this process. I mean, the House of Representatives is given the sole power of impeachment by the Constitution, and it's been a while since the public has seen an impeachment process. So a lot of this is sort of public education.
Yeah, and the witnesses are all educators. They're all professors. Noah Feldman of Harvard, Michael Gerhardt of the University of North Carolina, Pamela Carlin of Stanford, and Jonathan Turley of the George Washington University Law School. So they'll be helping interpret impeachment as a constitutional concept and help the Judiciary Committee think through what was in the House Intelligence Committee's report. Now, the report is gigantic, but it's still worth reading at least the preface and the executive summary, I think. It's about 20 pages long, and it kind of lays everything out. But, Deirdre, I'm not sure that there was a lot new in this report. One or two new things, but mostly it was what we expected, right?
It was. I mean, so much of this process has been public. We watched open hearings day after day after day for a couple weeks in a row. Plus, we had reams of transcripts from the closed-door interviews. So we got to see specifically what all these different witnesses from the State Department told the Intelligence Committee in private and in public. So the report basically builds a narrative about the testimony they gave and sort of lays out what the House Intelligence Committee chairman said yesterday was an abundant sense of evidence that the president did use his office to leverage military assistance in return for political investigations. That's the argument in the report, which he organized in sort of two sections. One lengthy section on what they said is the president's, quote, scheme to, as I said, use his office to get the Ukrainian president to agree to public investigations, make a public statement about investigations about the Bidens. And then a second section that was a really lengthy sort of list of all the ways the Democrats believe that the president and his administration has obstructed Congress.
Now, these two reports that came out, one from the committee under the leadership of Democrats, because, of course, Democrats control the House, and another one from Republicans, which refers to it as the Democrats' impeachment inquiry, was kind of designed from the jump and kind of throughout to delegitimize the process. There also seem to be some parts of the Republican, some called it a prebuttal because it came out before the full report, that are just not quite true. I mean, the report says that none of the Democrats' witnesses testified to having evidence of bribery, extortion, or any high crime or misdemeanor. That is not true, because a number of the witnesses did testify that there was a quid pro quo, and that's within the definition of bribery. So what do we make of these two reports?
Well, I mean, I think it just shows you what we've seen throughout this process. I mean, the Republicans' report issued Monday was really just restating what they've been saying all along through this process. I mean, they have argued from the get-go that there was no sort of direct pressure, firsthand evidence that the president explicitly asked for these political investigations explicitly in return for releasing the military aid. They say, look, Ukraine got the military aid. There wasn't a White House meeting, so you guys don't have the evidence. But what the Democrats did was throughout these depositions and hearings is they went through and proved all of the allegations in the whistleblower complaint. So they did set up a fact pattern, although they weren't able to get access to firsthand witnesses like acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney or Secretary of State Pompeo. But they did establish through other witnesses sort of how the whistleblower complaint was proven out.
Now, President Trump claimed that he would be open to having some witnesses testify. He said, at least previously, that he would love to take part in this somehow if it could be done fairly. But is that part of this process over? I mean, are we now down to the deliberation process, or might we hear from some more fact witnesses in this matter?
It doesn't appear that the Judiciary Committee is going to call any fact witnesses. We don't know what their plans are for next week. But I think the real wild card in this whole process is, you know, if the House of Representatives does approve articles of impeachment and we go to a Senate trial, the president did signal that he would be open to potentially having some witnesses testify in a Senate trial. There could be some agreement in that process because Republicans control the Senate. It could end up that one or more of those witnesses does appear. I think there's a lot we don't know about how the Senate trial will work.
We're speaking to NPR congressional editor Deirdre Walsh with regards to that money moving to the Ukraine for it to buy Javelin missiles, anti-tank missiles in its ongoing hot war with Russia. Thomas writes, some Republicans are saying that since the money for Ukraine was ultimately released, there is no grounds for a quid pro quo. Former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich is serving a 14-year prison term for trying to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat. He never sold the seat, but he tried. And trying to do so was enough to earn him a conviction and a stiff prison term. I hear where Thomas is coming from, but you already said this, Deirdre. This is not a criminal prosecution. This is a political process. I hear Thomas's point in terms of the nature of defining these terms, but this is an inherently political process. And Chairman Adam Schiff, who chairs the Intelligence Committee, discussed that earlier today on Morning Edition. Steve Inskeep asked him if he was concerned at all about the impeachment process backfiring and maybe leaving President Trump stronger politically.
My own feeling is we ought to figure out what's best for the country. We ought to figure out what the Constitution has to say about this. And we have to decide for ourselves, are we prepared to accept this kind of misconduct in the President of the United States? Because if we are, we can expect there's going to be a lot more of it.
That's Chairman Adam Schiff of the House Intelligence Committee speaking on Morning Edition. Deirdre, I don't know about you, but it sounds like he didn't quite answer that question directly about the political calculus of all this.
He is not. And I think there's still a discussion inside the Democratic caucus, which, by the way, is meeting right now this morning in a closed door meeting where they kicked all the staff out about sort of what they need to do next. I think that, you know, Nancy Pelosi, House Speaker Pelosi, has felt very confident in moving forward and continues to say the facts in this case are uncontested. But we haven't heard from a lot of the members in sort of more vulnerable swing districts about whether they're getting any blowback at home for this impeachment process.
On the flip side, though, I also hear what Chairman Schiff is saying and what a number of Democrats and a very, very small number of Republicans have been saying, which is that election or no election, this question needs to be answered now because if Donald Trump is impeachable, he should not stand for re-election or he should at least have to go through re-election with the stain of impeachment on him for constitutional reasons.
Right. And the other thing Schiff said yesterday was that they need to do this now because he said there's a grave risk to the country if they continue to wait around and try to continue an investigation and find out more facts. Essentially, he's saying he could do it again.
Now, what's the response that we're expecting today? Right now, Chairman Jerry Nadler, who chairs the Judiciary Committee, is making his opening statement. Then the ranking member, the Republican member of the committee, will do the same. They'll have 45-minute rounds of questioning, first the Democrats, then the Republicans, and then each member will get to ask questions for 5 minutes. Basically the same procedure as the Intelligence Committee hearings. Deirdre, what are we expecting from the hearings today? Basically what we got from the Intel Committee, or a different tone, a different tenor, a different focus?
I do think we'll see a much more partisan tone. This committee is
more
double.
Partisan than the Intel Committee.
I do. I mean, the Judiciary Committee is double the size of the Intelligence Committee, and it represents sort of the most progressive wing of the House Democratic Caucus and the most conservative wing of the Republican Conference. The members on these committees are sort of the strongest defenders of President Trump, people like Jim Jordan, people like the ranking member Doug Collins, and Florida Representative Matt Gaetz, who's sort of sees himself as sort of a brawler for Trump in these kinds of sessions. And on the Democratic side, you have a lot of progressives who were publicly pushing impeachment way before this whole whistleblower complaint came out about Ukraine. So I think we might end up seeing sort of a lot of more of political debate between those two sides of the committee, and probably less academic talk with some of these witnesses. I mean, I think the beginning will be a lot of questioning from the counsels and the chairman.
That's NPR congressional editor Deirdre Walsh. Deirdre, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Coming up, we will shift gears to an icon of pop music. Whitney Houston fascinated the world with her music and her life, but that life includes a love story that's never been told until now. I'm Joshua Johnson, so glad to be with you, and you are listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.